It's freaking cold.
You got frostbite yet?
In the frigid Canadian North, young pilots seeking adventure.
That's why all those guys are up here.
Battle the elements in World War II planes.
Oh, okay.
This episode, fire alarms put Devin in the hot seat. And Arnie returns to drop a bomb.
That's crazy.
As Buffalo goes into the stunt flying business. Dark and early at Buffalo Airways, and there's already trouble.
You want to grab a couple of frostbiters, bring them over.
Freezing rain overnight has encrusted the airline's vintage C-46 cargo plane in ice. That's throwing a wrench into food and mail deliveries to remote settlements.
Well, Ian's been here since 6:30.
Oh, it's 9 o'clock now.
Already 2 hours behind schedule, C-46 Captain Devin Brooks needs to get his frozen plane defrosted quick. But it's minus 15 now.
We got tarps, we got everything going on.
So every available body helps de-ice the 65-year-old cargo plane. Tents are thrown over the ice-covered wings. And frost fighters pumping out 300,000 BTUs of heat try to melt the 3/4-inch layer of ice.
We'll get out of here sometime today.
It's a terrible start to the day. And it's about to get worse for Devin. Flying in from Hay River, the boss, Buffalo Joe McBrien, is surprised that the C-46 is still on the tarmac.
I can't believe this shit, you know? I didn't grow up like this.
No, well, I didn't either.
I gotta get something on and go, get 400 miles and take guys 4 hours late.
Joe was talking that we're late and, well, giving a shit. You know, that we should have thought about it the night before.
This time of year, we know the freezing rain and the wet fog we get.
Well, I honestly looked at it, and I didn't see freezing drizzle.
They can't bullshit me, because I've already flown, done my trip, and they haven't got airborne yet. They're not going to get airborne for a couple hours.
Joe checks out the horizontal stabilizer on the tail. It must be completely clean of ice before they fly.
Still not ready to go. Still going to be a couple hours.
Well, we'll get her done.
They wanted to get loaded and get out of there and head up the valley.
Joe hates delays. They're bad for business. Now it's up to Devin to get this bird in the air fast.
He says 2 hours, so I want to be the f*** out of you.
Gotcha.
They scramble to put a Herman Nelson heater on the tail of the C-46.
We're going
to
do the whole wing at once.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Finally, some progress. The ice is softened enough that it can be scraped away. A coat of alcohol solution will keep the ice from forming again.
5 hours of madness, man.
Maybe even more.
Ready. See us tonight.
Yeah.
After 6 hours of heating, scraping, and mopping the wings, Devin and Ian have certainly earned their coffee.
I've got to be a little stiff tonight.
Yep, me too.
I will hand it to guys like Ernie, though. I don't know how he did this for so long.
Meanwhile, in northern British Columbia, 67-year-old veteran pilot Arnie Schrader is buzzing the last bit of fall colors off the trees. Arnie's on a special assignment that requires him to push the limit of how low and how fast he can fly this classic four-engine DC-4.
4-200 miles an hour, that's about 60 feet yards.
Yeah. I just did it by eyeball. That altimeter that we have in the airplane is not much better than what they had in 1943.
Arnie has been recruited to pull off a risky stunt for a British film, reenacting the extraordinary Dam Busters raid from World War II. They're trying to duplicate the same bouncing bomb technique developed by British scientist Barnes Wallace back in 1943. Called Operation Chastise, the plan was to skip specialized bombs along the Ruhr River and blow up heavily guarded German hydroelectric dams. It was a daring attempt to shut down the Reich's power supply. Incredibly, it worked. The bombs bounced up to two dams, sunk to their bases, and then detonated. Buffalo General Manager Mikey McBrien pulled Arnie out of his recent retirement for this special job.
I got a phone call one day from a company out of England, and they were like, we're going to bounce a spinning bomb on the water and try to blow up a fake dam with an airplane. I was like, sure, you called the right people, because I don't even know how we're going to do it, but I don't think anyone else would even want to do it, let alone can do it.
Arnie will take off from McKenzie Airport for some test drops on nearby Williston Lake. It's all prelude to the main event, bouncing a bomb up to this dam. It's currently under construction in a trench just offshore. In the hangar, Cambridge University engineering prof Hugh Hunt, the film's technical consultant, reviews previous attempts to bounce a bomb on water.
So look, we've talked quite a lot about, I guess in principle, what we're trying to do. But I want to show you a couple little movie clips. This was after the war.
Well, he's going to get nailed. He's too close.
He's very close, and beautiful. Look how high it goes.
Holy shit.
Look how high it goes. Because that angle came in, you know, at 5 degrees or less, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a view out the back of the plane. But look how high it goes.
Close to the airplane.
The right combination of the plane's speed and height are crucial, but too fast and too low can lead to disaster.
Comes in. How high do you reckon this plane is?
Very high. I wouldn't want it. 10, 15 feet.
And then down it goes, and then...
Too low.
I would seriously consider not doing it if Arnie wasn't involved. It's just too dangerous. It's not worth losing a life over or losing an aircraft.
It's a grim reminder of the risk still involved. First, it was freezing rain that turned their plane into an icicle. Now, co-pilot Ian Bottomley and Captain Devin Brooks are finally on their milk run up the Mackenzie Valley in the Northwest Territories.
Go ahead. All yours.
But today's troubles have just begun. Next stop, Norman Wells.
On the takeoff roll, that we got our first indication that something was wrong.
What do you got, a fire light?
What's that?
Got a fire light, eh?
The fire alarms came on and we seen them.
B1.
But we were already past our B1 speed, so we gotta go.
B1 is the critical engine failure decision speed. Now, even if an engine fails, takeoff must continue to V2. Liftoff speed.
I've never had a firelight go off in flight.
With nowhere to go but up, there's no worse time for an engine fire.
Yeah.
It's the worst possible time for an engine fire. As Devin and Ian lift off from Delaney, a fire alarm sounds on their C-46.
Oh, they got a fire alarm? V1. V2.
Okay, just take a good look.
Took a good look, didn't see any fire, smoke, anything unusual. All the gauges read good.
But once they reduce power after takeoff, the alarm stops.
Gives you a little bit of an indication that maybe there's a probe that's grounding on something.
Just try to take a look and see what side you can pass, if there's a whole lot of exhaust coming out. Okay, fire.
Ian goes back to get a better look at the engine.
When you're sitting in that co-pilot seat, you can only see a third to half the engine. So when you go back, you can see oil flowing over the back of the wing that you can't see from the co-pilot seat.
I don't see anything. No exhaust or anything coming out anywhere, no oil or anything like that.
It seems like a false alarm, but there's no way to be sure while they're in flight. All Devin and Ian can do is get to Norman Wells and figure out their next step there. Back at Buffalo headquarters, big changes are brewing.
She wouldn't know what to do without me.
A new manager, Dwayne Hicks, has been brought in from the south to get the operation running smoothly.
Well, it looks like there's quite a few vehicles over there.
Dwayne has big plans. One is putting an end to the chaos in the courier operation.
Well, we'll see how this is going to go. How are you, Janelle?
Kelly and Janelle, who run cargo and courier, are eager to see changes, and Dwayne's first plan is to impose order. But when he posted a work schedule, the Rampies rebelled.
Sat there. Nice, big, big schedule. Sat right there. They'd all know when their days off were. They all knew when they worked, but all of a sudden they didn't know.
Schedules have never worked that well at Buffalo. Rampies can be unreliable. So Janelle and Kelly just organize a day or so at a time.
Well, I thought you meant me, just call whoever.
No. We're going to have somebody.
They won't answer the phone.
No, they will with me.
If he managed to succeed in getting it to run a little bit smoother, that would be great.
I'll make a full schedule like I did last time.
The schedule is going back up. Dwayne is taking charge.
I'm going to give everybody a good talking to, too, because they've had enough rope, and they all hung themselves. So.
Over in British Columbia, Arnie Schrader and his Buffalo DC-4 crew have been hired by British filmmakers to reenact World War II's audacious Dam Busters raid. That's when the RAF bounced special bombs up to two heavily guarded German dams.
Out of the way, we're going to get the bounce ball in here. Come on.
Buffalo mechanic Chuck Adams has slung a 600-pound barrel, a replica of the World War II bomb, under the DC-4. To make it bounce on water, technical consultant Hugh Hunt has calculated that the barrel bomb must spin at least 700 RPM upon release, just as it did in 1943.
Okay, we ready?
Buffalo gets set to give it a whirl. Mikey monitors the RPMs as Chuck spools up the barrel using high-powered drills.
8, 9, 1,000.
I'll see what the RPM is.
13, 76.
Let's see, Dan. 1 minute.
With the barrel spinning at almost 1,400 RPM, Arnie has to fly to the drop zone as fast as possible.
Get her going, Arnie.
But there's no way to avoid the slow taxi to the runway. The barrel has spun down to 500 RPM.
Hey guys, are you down in the drop spot?
On the shore of Williston Lake, Mikey, Hugh, and the documentary crew are set up to watch the drop.
I-2M, this is Buffalo Bradley. Confirmation on you.
Now, Arnie has to find the white markers on the water so he can line up to the drop point.
There's one here, right under me.
These white markers are not going to work. We don't see them until right top.
Okay, copy, IQM.
Arnie can't see the markers, so he moves to plan B.
Could do a call shot, eh?
Yeah, you know how to do a call shot, Mike? As I'm coming up in that first one, just let me know. Just say bombs away now.
Okay, I'll call bombs away at the first marker. So this is going to be a drop.
We're on final and this thing is spun down to 390 RPM, so...
EQM, do you want me to call bombs away?
Go ahead when you want.
Flying 150 feet above the water, Arnie reaches the drop zone.
Bombs away.
Bomb gone.
But the barrel doesn't skip. The RPMs are way below the necessary 700.
But it says, well, 350 RPM, that's it? I thought it bounced.
At least we're really good.
Back at the airport, Chuck's already heard the news.
We've got to get more RPM over though. It's cooled down pretty fast. It slowed down, yeah.
Chuck needs to figure out how to spin the barrel so it will skip half a kilometer on water and hit the dam. Or this show is over. In Norman Wells, Devin and Ian land the C-46. An alarm during their last takeoff alerted them to a possible fire in the right engine, but they couldn't see any flames. As they offload, Devin updates Director of Maintenance Rod McBrien about the fire alarm light.
Devin phoned me saying he's got a fire light goes out at 46 inches.
Well, at takeoff power and meadow power, the fire lights are coming on. Once we pulled the power back to climb there, the lights went out.
There was a whole process that Devin went through. There was no burns in the cowling. There was no excessive leaks or oil or stains or anything like that, which indicates a fire probe malfunction.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Without any signs of a fire, the light must be acting up. The engine fire alarm system on the C-46 is a loop of probes that set off an alarm in the cockpit when they get too hot.
Devin did as much as he could to verify that it was safe, so.
That'll go off when we're still on the runway.
Devin and Ian get set to fly to Toledo, the last stop on today's Valley Run.
Just ignoring the bell, I guess.
About halfway down the runway, the fire light came on. Did the takeoff, pulled back the throttles, and the light went out.
1-8,
see anything there? I don't see anything, man.
But it just increases the stress and gets you thinking a little more.
An engine fire could blow off an entire wing. With one stop to go, Devin's got to decide. Is it another false alarm, or is there a fire flaring up that he can't see? In Mackenzie, BC, Buffalo Airways is helping a British film crew reenact World War II's dangerous dam busters raid.
We're going to drop this bomb in, you guys.
Director Ian Duncan inspects a special dam being built for the occasion.
We're packing all these cracks up with rags to stop the water actually. Oh, what's it doing, Rick?
The pressure on the polyethylene can push it into these cracks, and if it pushes it too deep, it'll split the polyethylene, and all of a sudden our dam will be leaking.
The RAF's bouncing bombs blasted through German dams back in 1943. Repeating that feat is proving complicated.
They actually didn't have to build a dam. Here they go and bomb it. We've got to build our own dam and then bomb it.
Chuck still needs to find a way to spin the bomb fast enough so it can skip along the water. So he tries a new method.
The
Instead of spinning the bomb on the tarmac by the hangar, Chuck and his pit crew race out to the plane on the runway just before takeoff. This time, they get the bomb revving to nearly 1,500 RPM. At the lake, Mikey and the documentary's technical advisor, Hugh Hunt, await the biggest test yet.
We're coming up final, Mikey.
Yeah, they're on final. Thank you, Emma. I have visual.
But Arnie still can't spot the markers on the water. Mikey must make the call.
Go ahead, Mikey, for the mark call.
Arnie nears the drop zone.
On the way. Bomb gone, bomb gone.
Woo! Beautiful skip.
Chuck's last-minute spin-up method made the difference.
IQM, she looked very beautiful.
Oh, it's good. Okay, boys, we're going back to the airport and land.
Hey, Roger.
We've actually made the bomb bounce. And no one's done that since 1943.
But just bouncing a bomb is simpler than bouncing one into the middle of the dam. To do that, Arnie will need to fly a perfect line at 60 feet and with split-second judgment, release the bomb. In the settlement of Toledo, C-46 Captain Devin Brooks and co-pilot Ian Bottomley are about to take off for Yellowknife.
Toledo for radio, Buffalo 301.
This day has been anything but routine. With a late start and mysterious engine fire alarms on the last two takeoffs.
Looking at now 50.
Devin and Ian gamble that it's a false alarm caused by an overly sensitive probe.
It's gonna go off anyway. Probably not.
The alarm goes off as they reach maximum power. But unlike before, it doesn't stop as they hit climb power.
And then that really made me wonder. And then we got up to our 9,500 feet and started to think about it a little.
She looks good over here.
Devin suspects the alarm and fire may be real. He goes to the back to take a look.
But we just happened to have a little tiny hole beside a piano hinge on an access panel that we could see a blue flame inside the cowl.
Can you see that access panel from there? Do you see anything glowing from the left side of the cowl?
Well, that's what we thought it was, but you never know what the illusions of flying at night and the flames coming under the exhaust as well anyway.
Look up in this corner to see if you can see a light.
Is it flickering?
Yeah, it's going poof, poof.
Now, Ian takes a look.
Actually, just a little crack in one of the hinges there where you could see inside the engine. See the blue flame?
What do you think? Pretty blue flame, isn't it? It does look like flame in that top left corner.
We wanted to take every little bit of information to heart, make the right decision, not kill ourselves, and not wreck the airplane.
There's no way that can be some, like, stupid-ass illusion that we're both missing, could it?
That's why we chatted for a while.
I don't think so. I don't think you can get illusion in a black space. Ah, shit.
Sometimes, at night, stuff plays tricks on you.
It seems almost unmistakable now. A fire in the right engine.
Well, one of my worst fears in the C-46 is that of a fire. Since it has no firewall, most conventional airplanes all have firewalls. DC-3s and all those other ones, they all have firewalls. So at least it'll stop it, for the most part, from getting into the wings where you still have 4,000 or 5,000 pounds of fuel.
Without a firewall, the three fuel tanks in the wing are exposed. An engine fire could spread rapidly and ignite the fuel tanks. Devin's only way to prevent a potentially catastrophic fire is to shut down the engine.
Ian and I continued to second guess each other.
I don't want to. Nor do I.
Once you shut it down, you're not going to get started again. That's it.
If Devin needs to abort the landing, a single engine may not provide enough power for the plane to climb back up. He has a tough decision. Risk a one-engine landing, or risk an even bigger engine fire. Buffalo Airways C-46 is heading back to Yellowknife with a possible fire in one engine. Captain Devin Brooks has to make a critical decision, whether or not to shut the right engine down and land with only the left.
Shut the son of a bitch down. I've had enough.
We've been lucky so far, and probably best not to keep pushing our luck.
Just throttle back slowly and shut her down.
The pilot spotted a blue flame behind a hinge in the right engine's cowling.
If that hole hadn't been in that access panel, we probably would have never shut it down.
There you go, pull it. Yep, she stopped. Roger.
But they're not home free yet. They still have to bring the C-46 in on one engine.
6 foot hours to make your station in about 18 minutes.
Devin will have only one chance to land the 30,000-pound vintage aircraft.
You never want to overshoot with one engine.
Gear down. 1,200 above.
Because the right engine was out, if the wind was on the right side of the airplane, it would in turn want to spin you more.
So you got to push your tail back over to keep you going straight.
A perfect one-engine landing.
Roger.
After that, Ian and I pretty much wanted to go home.
Once the C-46 is in the hangar, Rod wants to look at the engine right away. And what he discovers under the cowling is startling.
It's broke.
A gaping hole in the exhaust.
So basically this piece broke off, which then you shoot a flame against the breather line.
The flame melted an air hose. But if it had been an oil line, the situation could have been a disaster.
I think Devin makes the right choice all the time, really. And this was just another example of him making the right choice.
What did it do?
Joe's worried about bigger problems facing the C-46.
There is no spare exhaust.
Replacement exhaust parts for this rare plane are becoming impossible to find.
I believe that there is some out there. We just haven't been able to put our hands on it yet. But in the next month, we'll have to make up our mind whether or not we're going to keep on looking or start building our parked airplanes.
With exhaust parts so scarce, Joe could be forced to park his two working C-46s sooner than he expects, threatening the business he spent years building.
Might as well load up.
It's a busy morning in Buffalo. At TXW, Joe's only other functioning C-46 is gearing up for a valley run. New manager Dwayne Hicks is keeping an eye on the operation.
Okay, so now the normal well stuff goes over to the C-46, right?
Well, no, it's when okay. You get we got to that
Kelly one. And Scott are almost finished loading the C-46 with perishable food. AJ DeCoste, who just flew in on a last-minute DC-3 cargo haul, is supposed to fly today's C-46 food run. But when he checks the weather along the route...
Hey, Scott. Unfortunately, it doesn't look very good up there right now. It's very windy, and they're calling for, like, areas of severe turbulence. Might not be the best day to do the trip.
AJ has to break the news to Kelly.
Hopefully this doesn't bugger Kelly up too bad there. The weather doesn't look very good up there today, so probably have to delay till tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Nothing, just unloading the airplane.
Now Kelly and Scott will have to unload 13,000 pounds of cargo.
Now I gotta tear them all apart and put them all back in their spot. Okay, shit show begins.
Kelly has to unpack all the freight and sort it into the fridges and freezers.
That'll just go in the freezer again.
Redoing hours of work.
And Matt wraps them so they'll never come apart.
To senior manager Dwayne, it's another example of poor coordination at Buffalo.
Not very efficient, just put it that way.
It will take everything Dwayne's got to beat Buffalo into shape. Over at the documentary shoot in McKenzie, it's looking a little more colorful.
Ernie, can you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Mikey has some new toys.
We have some buoys out in the water that the flight crew is having trouble seeing just because, you know, if the water's a little bit rough.
As they head out to install the pool toy markers at the lake, Arnie and Alex get ready for the final bombing test run.
Roger. Clear right, clear left.
Yesterday, Arnie managed to skip the fake bomb three times. But his line was off. Today, the new brighter markers should help guide him in. For this run, they've got a heavier bomb, identical to the one they'll use to hit the dam. So Arnie will have to fly lower and faster.
One.
Chuck and his crew have no trouble spinning the 800-pound barrel up to the maximum RPM.
At 12. Well, they said go.
If this morning's practice runs go without a hitch, Arnie will try to bomb the dam this afternoon.
Roger, right here up.
Yeah, Mike, you got your 5x5. We're just getting our after takeoff checks done here.
I copy, Ernie. With this run, I'm not going to tell you bombs away. You're going to press the button when you see the green and yellow jungle.
The green and yellow jungle, yeah, okay.
I'll do radio silence, and all I'll do is call a bomb gong when she's dropped.
Okay, radio silence, good now.
Flying fast and low, 340 kilometers per hour, just 60 feet above the water.
I see the first buoy. One, two, three, they're all lined up, we got them.
Holy man, that's crazy.
Hey, you're getting started to 1,000, so...
Buffalo Airways is in McKenzie, B.C., on a stunt flying mission for a British documentary, recreating the famous Dam Busters raids of 1943.
Well, they said go.
Arnie is on approach to the drop site.
I copy, Arnie.
With new markers on the water and with a heavier bomb on board, he needs to fly lower and faster to make it skip.
Holy f***, man, that's crazy.
One, two, three, they're all lined up. We got them.
Bounces. An excellent result.
She was beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, good. She come out evenly.
Oh, she was absolutely beautiful.
With the last practice drop a success, it's the moment that everyone's been waiting for. The final bombing run. So the channel is opened and the dam is flooded.
Our dam designers have said that the most crucial moment of any dam is when you fill it for the first time.
but Director Ian Duncan and everyone else get a nasty surprise. The dam is leaking. It could wash out before Arnie gets a chance to bomb it, ruining the entire documentary. Ian needs the dam intact to complete his story. He checks with engineer Rick Donnelly.
What do you think will happen here if we let it run like this?
The fact that it's going through the dam isn't a huge problem. What I'm worried about is the two abutments.
If I don't do anything about the abutment, that's the only worry.
Yeah.
The abutment could wash away, the block settle, and the whole thing fail.
Rick's solution? Reinforce the abutments to keep the dam intact and hold the water back. But Hugh Hunt, the documentary's technical advisor, is anxious to carry on.
But I think there's no point in waiting around for it to seal up. We've just got to get on and bounce these bombs.
And that's exactly what the Buffalo crew has in mind.
There's one guy in the world to make it happen, this guy, right?
We're going to drop a bomb, man.
There's no time to waste. The sides of the dam could collapse at any moment. Arnie will have to fly at 340 kilometers per hour, barely 60 feet above the lake, release the spinning bomb at a precise point in the mouth of the channel, and have the bomb skip along the water and hit the dam nearly half a kilometer away. Arnie taxis out to the runway.
I got a little bit of an update for you when it regards to the buoys. Okay, they drifted, so Hugh's saying try to go 20 feet to the left.
I think they're a little bit too far back. It's done, but I think, I'd rather have it nail the dam. The truck can pick up the...
Chuck and his pit crew get set to rev it up.
That's 13. 14.2,
14.3. 1,430 RPM. That's all Arnie's going to get.
Okay, let's go. B1. Got it right here.
Arnie heads for the dam.
Hey, Mikey, we're airborne.
With the dam still leaking, there's no time to waste. Everyone has to move to a safe distance. Ian and his crew finalize their last-minute camera positions.
I hear him.
Hey!
Woo! I'm nervous. I don't really get nervous that often.
There's a helicopter dead ahead. Hey, make sure that chopper's out of our way there.
Chopper, I hate air there.
Hey, Charlie, watch out. The AC-4 here, we're slowly making our right turn. I got you in place there. I'll be off to the north here. Your way. Okay, roger.
Now, with the skies clear, Arnie can make his approach.
Arnie, do you have time to get a quick RPM on the bomb? This is it!
Spinning fast.
The bomb under the DC-4 is spinning much faster than on the practice run. And that's not all.
The
water was glassy over the lake, so it's a little hard to judge your height without any trees or anything around you. So we were probably 10, 50 feet lower than we should have been.
I can see the buoys are slightly on an angle.
Oh yeah, I got the buoys. They go left.
In the final seconds, all cameras are on Arnie coming in fast and very low.
Looks good, height looks good, Arnie.
Heading straight for the dam.
Make it work.
I didn't know until Mikey was hollering on the radio that
I hit it right in the center.
Arnie nails the dam with an 800-pound bouncing bomb on his first try.
Knocked a couple of those blocks just about right out of there. And they're 5,000 pounds apiece, so it moved 10,000 pounds.
Ow! That means it's sunk close enough to the dam that we can blow it up.
That's close enough for
us. That's it. We've done it. One hit. Stop filming. We're finished. We've done it. Stop filming. That was just amazing.
In the twilight of his career, Arnie Schrader just made history.
Arnie's 67, and they did this 67 years ago.
The next step is to blow up the dam for real.
It's going to blow.
In a hangar in Mackenzie, British Columbia, the Dam Busters documentary is flying high.
And look, that line, Arnie, that line is just brilliant.
Dead on. But it was fairly calm, so that helped.
Arnie Schrader nailed a 10-meter-high dam with an 800-pound fake bomb on his first try.
Right down center, man. Only Buffalo Airways could do that, brother.
Right. We probably hit it a little harder than you wanted.
No, we can't have it.
Just a little bit. We're still going to do our main lifting.
The bombing run was the first of a two-part process recreating the 1943 attacks on German dams.
Okay, Jim!
The second part is actually blowing up the dam. In 1943, the bouncing bombs were designed to sink to the base of the dams, then blow up. To recreate that, they'll sink a depth charge to the bottom of this newly built dam. The only thing left to do is stand back and watch the big finale.
I don't like scary movies because stuff pops out at you. It's gonna blow.
The guy should.
Let's go.
He's gone now.
There's not much left of that time.
This is like if you gave a 5-year-old an airplane and a dam and a bomb, this is what he would do. This is what we did.
Okay.
Sorry, that is amazing. You know, it's the shortest life a dam's ever had, I think.
So you guys happy?
No.
Let's do it again.
Are you kidding?
67 years after RAF pilots executed an amazing raid on two German dams, a 67-year-old retired pilot pulls off a similar feat. Arnie Schrader and his wartime era DC-4 hit the target. An explosive encore to his impressive career.
Arnie, you're my hero.
Right on, thank God.